This is.
See, the world is looking up. We're gonna make it yet.
Well, let's not get too hasty. It seems like we're all gonna
Just
die. Yeah.
whatever. Don't, look at you, just totally woke Ringo up. He totally like
Oh.
came to life.
Because I said we're all gonna die, and he's like, really?
Yes, he's like,
Thank God.
I'm gonna make it.
I'm gonna live forever.
This is Why, with your hosts, Heidi Hedquist and Luke Poling.
I came back and I was starving because I hadn't eaten all day. And I'm like, I'm just going to sit. And I ate an entire box of Girl Scout cookies. Like,
Yeah.
if this is how it ends, let's just eat what we want.
Oh no, I Double Stuff and I are on a very
Right?
good basis after this week.
Look, when I had one of the most tragic times of my life, I ate nothing but chocolate and vodka because I was taking tap with my grandma and we had to sell candy bars for our tap class. But I ate them all and I drank and I
Right.
lost like 20 pounds and I got really happy really fast.
Yeah, well, there you go. Two questions, follow-ups.
Yes.
How old were you?
Like 30.
Okay. And you were taking tap classes with your grandmother?
Yes, we did our first recital on her 80th birthday.
Is there video?
Oh yeah, it's great.
Again and again and again, we have this conversation. There are things you are not telling me. There are things you're not telling our listeners.
The show going. It might be all anyone has to listen to
Our
someday.
listenership would rock it if they knew there was video of you tap dancing with an 80-year-old.
Yes, we did it for like 5 years. And the only reason we stopped was because she had sciatica.
Did you have a name for your like group, like Gin and Tonic, or?
Well, we were in a class, but we probably would have been gin and tonic.
Let me guess, what songs did you guys tap to? Putting on the Ritz is an easy one.
We didn't do that one. Well, see, the first one, which was my
Laura
favorite
Branigan,
routine.
Control.
Oh, that would be awesome if we
Miss
did
Jackson.
Control. No.
What'd you guys
We
tap to?
did. Oh, we had some doozies. So the first year, which was my favorite, and it was also my favorite costume, but I was really bothered because the song and the costume didn't go together.
How many 30-year-olds are able to use that phrase? I had a great costume, but you were saying.
We tapped to Route 66.
Oh my God, yes.
However, our costumes were flapper dresses.
For our listeners, I'm making the look like the dog hearing a voice coming out of the phone. What? So,
Right? It doesn't fit.
okay. Second recital.
We did, I can't remember. Okay, 1 year we did Holiday Road.
What was the costume for that?
I think that one was the year we had the really ugly, like black pants and the white button-down shirts. I didn't like that one.
Were you wearing white gloves and like sequin
No,
bow
but
ties?
we did have one, and I can't remember the song. I don't remember. Oh, I'm so mad I can't remember the song. But we did. That's amazing. Yes, that's exactly what we did, just like that. But we did one where we had these little like. They were like rompers. Like they put the eight, there was another 80-year-old in our class. They were blue sailor rompers with like
Oh my
sequin
God.
star,
Yes.
very
Yes.
like USO. So my grandma was down with it. It was very like 40s USO. And we had
Boogie
little,
Woogie Bugle Boy. Did you do that
it
one?
might have been Boogie Woogie Bugle Boy. I sang Boogie Woogie Bugle Boy with the
Oh my God, that's
and
amazing.
Chattanooga Choo Choo.
Of course. Of course you did the Chattanooga Choo Choo. What else would you do?
Right.
Oh my, how many people were in this class?
There were actually probably about 15.
Okay, age ranges.
Like 20s to 80.
So there wasn't like a really precocious 14-year-old.
No,
Just
but we no. They get to go
okay.
to the regular, that they're not in the adult class.
Right. In the studio, was it just, it was like a dance studio, I'm assuming, right?
Yes.
How many pictures of Gregory Hines were around?
None.
Saving
There should
Glover? Okay, I'm out of tap dancing. Sammy Davis Jr.
Gene Kelly.
Yeah, okay, fine. But he's
Fred Astaire.
But they did other things than just tap.
Ginger Rogers.
You're
Danny, no.
DeVito? No.
Yes, Danny DeVito.
Danny
masterful yeah. tap dancer.
Yes.
Donald O'Connor. That's what
yeah,
I was thinking.
Okay, there we go.
Mitzi Gaynor.
Esther Williams. I get it. You have the names of old dancers. But I'm yes. just, okay, wow. Tell me more. I don't even know what to ask. I just want to know everything about this.
That's really all there is to know.
No, not true. Not true. The fact that we've been doing this show for over a year and this information is only coming out proves that there is more.
I'm actually surprised you didn't know that already. It's one of my, like, I don't really bury that. I tell everybody I tapped.
Yeah, you should. Do you have pictures like you carry around in your wallet?
I have a framed picture of us in my office.
How come I've never seen this?
You've never been to my office.
Fair enough.
Yeah, now you may never come because of but I, we're destined oh, okay. to never leave.
So Boogie Woogie Bugle Boy.
Mm-hmm.
I can't even think
Route
what you
66.
Would say. Route 66, which is amazing.
Yes.
King of the Road? That would have been a good one.
King of the Road would have been a good one.
Mm. Or if you want to bring everybody down, 16 tons would have been fun.
That would have been fun.
You could have dressed as hobos.
Hobos would have been great. I feel like a lot of dance like classes dress as hobos, though. I feel like right. it's sort of overdone.
With the like the stovetop hat with the top mm-hmm. of it kind of like opened
yeah,
up.
Yes, so, with a little like animal peeking out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if, yeah, for extra credit.
Mm-hmm. And the little bag on a stick.
Yep, yeah. what is that called, by the way? I've never known that.
Is that
a hobo bag? Like
yeah. It's not a rucksack, because like that's a backpack.
Yeah.
I love the name rucksack, though. I'm going to start using right. that.
I first came to your work reading the Obama-Biden series. Did you start that because you felt like Mondale fiction was just a dead avenue to be going down?
You know, it's really weird because I had the idea for doing a Biden book a long time ago. I just thought that the idea of a vice president in, you know, in the White House or wherever is the idea is they don't do anything, right? They sit there for 4 or 8 years and are only called on when they're needed, in which they're not needed very often. Unless the president wants to, you know, just pawn something off mm-hmm. on you. And so that was the idea. But publishers that I approached with it and my agent were just like, you know, there's just no interest in a solo Biden book because you're right. He has nothing to do. And, you know, they're like, we're not sure how popular he is. We're not even sure most people know who he is. You know, and so... I know. And fast forward a couple of years. And so it was right when Obama and Biden were ready to go out of office, like a month to the end. And everyone's like, oh, my gosh, they're so cute together. Oh, I wish they, you know, I wish they could stay around a little longer or whatever. And I said, oh, wait, you know, what was missing from my pitch was Barack Obama. He was right there the whole time. I said, you know, I don't have to have that bumbling detective on his own. He can have like a cool, suave guy next to him. And we got the buddy cop dynamic. And so that's what I ended up then pitching to Quirk Books, were the first one we pitched to. And they were like, oh, let's do it. So yeah, it wasn't a natural thing, though, that because I don't know. I wanted to do that bumbling detective, but you know, he seemed like a Leslie Nielsen or something.
Yes.
From Naked
yes,
Gun.
Totally.
That was very much who I saw Joe Biden as in my mind. Now, you know, when you do the research and stuff, Joe Biden is not like the popular conception of him at the time. And in fact, that's what I think a lot of people learned during the past year now that he's been running for office or whatever, is that, oh, wait a minute, this guy isn't the bumbling fool. He's really smart, although he says some questionable things once in a while, or
don't we all?
Awkward. Yeah. So my book is very much a fictional representation of him, though.
That said, I first came to your work reading the Obama Biden series. Did you start that because you felt like I have been reading Hope Rides Again, which mm-hmm. is the perfect antidote for this time in history. Yeah. The past week, my wife has been, I'm not allowed to quote from it anymore. like the first page, I mean, I believe the first sentence is, "This is a bunch of malarkey," or something along those lines.
Yes, yes, yes.
And it just gets better from there. And it's actually, it's a good mystery too. And there's like serious moments in it. I was sort of surprised at like, wow, there's a lot of stuff going on in here. This is not just a one joke that gets repeated for 200 pages.
Yeah, I think, you know, at first it was kind of a joke in my mind, the first book. But once I started to write it and I turned in some pages, I was like, I told my editor, I go, there's some stuff in here I think you're going to have to cut out. It gets a little deep. It's a little serious, you know, and it really, you know, talks about it. It really delves into the nature of like a male-male friendship, you know, the sort of, you know, men don't talk about their friendship to each other. And it got to some really uncomfortable places. And in fact, there were parts of it that made people at my publisher cry. When they read it, they were like, oh my God, this is really a touching story about two people. This is not a joke at all. And I said, well, you know, we can cut that out if you want. And they go, no, write more in that direction. And so it really got to be, a much deeper, more serious book. And I think that was the right way to play it too, because there've been a lot of, a lot of books about, you know, presidents and stuff that are just a one note right. joke, you know, and this, especially pairing it with a mystery, you have a story to go along with it. Cause it can't just be like, oh, look, this guy's just an idiot or something. No, there's a mystery there. And the first one was the first mystery I'd really written. And I think that the mystery in the second story is a little bit, just a little bit more polished than the mystery in the first story. But yeah, it was much different than it started out.
So we've talked to several mystery writers, and everybody's process is a little bit different and all of that. How did you go about crafting your mysteries, especially because this is sort of a new foray for you?
It's interesting. At first I was like, I needed to know emotionally where the story ends up at the end. You're writing a mystery, you know that this is going to be resolved in some way. You know that, you know, what's going to happen that as far as that goes, but you don't know, you know, quote unquote, who the bad guy is or whatever when you're writing it. And when I was writing it, it changed frequently. Like, I started off with like an idea for the second book, and you know, two chapters in, I was like, oh no, that's not going to work. And then I, for me, it works better if, you know, I know the emotional journey ahead of time that the characters are going to go on, but I need to figure it out along with the reader. You know, if it surprises me, I think it will surprise the reader. And so that's what my editor, it bugs the heck out of my editor. You know, who was like, who did it? Who did? Just tell me who did it. You know, I just need to have an idea where this is going. What's this book about? Is it about gun running? Is it about drugs? What's it about? And I go, I don't know yet. Well, we got to find out. She's like, but you're the writer. And I'm like, yeah, I have no idea.
It's no fun if you already know the end. Why write it?
I know. So yeah, I know there are two different types of writers. One, there are pantsers, and the other are plotters, whether you go by the seat of your pants or by a plot. And I think I'm sort of a combination, but yeah, I wouldn't write a book if I didn't know the end, as in how it's all going to be resolved. Like, okay, these characters are going to be friends at the end. These, you know, this is going to change for them, whatever. But yeah, but for the mystery itself, I need to know nothing about it. it really surprised me. And then once I got to the end, this happened with both books, and I got to the end, and then, you know, the main villain, so to speak, reveals themselves. I'm like, whoa, I didn't see that coming.
What a surprise.
I know.
Fantastic.
And it's surprising. It hit me while I was reading the book, how much Biden talks like a Philip Marlowe or Raymond Chandler, like a character, just naturally.
Yeah.
Really close to how Sam Spade talks.
Yeah. Yeah. I read a ton of old noirs and stuff while writing the books, but Biden does. He does have a way of talking that is just kind of this gruff old man, kind of choppy sometimes when he speaks. And it was, it was really interesting to try to capture his voice. Was not very difficult at all, because, I mean, it's such a trope, though, of the detective that speaks that way. But on the other hand, you know, having Biden do that, you're just like, oh my gosh, it's so natural. You can just totally see his inner monologue.
So have the dynamic duo read the book? Have you heard anything from them on the books?
Yeah. Obama has a copy. I don't know if he read it.
He totally read it. If he is the man I believe he is, he read it immediately.
Have you seen his annual reading list? It is dense. It is so heavy. He does not read anything, any mysteries, any sci-fi, any romance. You know, he reads like heavy stuff.
He reads the other stuff too. He just doesn't put it on the list.
He just doesn't tell people.
Come on now.
Well, how great would it be to have the next list come out and you're stuck between Colson Whitehead and Murakami?
I mean, come it's on.
Like, oh my gosh. Okay. every time that list comes out for the past couple of years, I've been like crossing my fingers. I'm like, I hit the New York Times list. I don't care. I just want to hit the Obama list.
Yes.
That's the one you want to hit. But I can't complain too much because Joe Biden has read it. For a long time, I didn't know if he had copies, and I met him, and the first time I met him, he said, oh, great job, Andrew. Love it. And I said, oh, that's awesome. I go, you read it. That's so cool. And he goes, no. I saw the cover, though.
The covers are incredible.
I know. But since that time, I found out then he has read it, and he did give an interview where he talked about the book and stuff to the Des Moines Register, which was pretty wild, because I was like, how did you get him to talk about, there's a lot of stuff he should be talking about, and none of it is this book. But of course, you know, I guess at the time, you know, he was running fifth place in the polls or whatever. And he's like, well, what have I got to lose? I'll just talk about it. And, you know, right after that interview runs, he bounces back, and in fact, the weirdest thing was, at one of the debates, he actually used the phrase hope never dies, which was just, it was just one of those weird moments where you're like, is this the guy in my book, or is this the real guy, or have they merged now into one? So that was pretty unique moment there.
See, I feel like that should be like at the forefront, and the covers should be, well, you know, they both have the covers blown up hanging in their office somewhere.
Oh,
have to.
Oh, of course.
Biden certainly does.
For sure.
Oh, 100%. Oh, yeah. I mean, he stares at it and he thinks it's his mirror, and then he's like, oh,
yes.
Wait a minute.
This is exactly what I would do if you wrote a buddy mystery about me and Luke, is I would blow up the cover and be like, oh, I look so much better than Luke does. And look at, I'm the lead and he's my sidekick.
You know, there was a lot of questions about who was going to be the lead in the book, who was going to be the sidekick. And it was actually a little controversial that I went with Biden as lead and not Obama. But my thinking was, you need a Watson for your Sherlock. And you need a, you know, you need that bland sort of character. I don't know bland, but you need that sort of down to earth character to interpret the super uber intelligent one or the really rich one like Gatsby or something. You need that narrator that's a step removed. And that's exactly what I did here, because I did try to write in Barack Obama's voice, and it is impossible because just the popular idea of what he sounds like. Barack Obama in the White House was called Spock because he was so sort of old and aloof and just so intelligent. He's so far removed from, you know, humanity or whatever. And so who he really is in real life, I don't know, but I just couldn't, you know, penetrate that. But I saw Joe Biden and I'm like, oh, this guy.
Well, I think
you can penetrate that. Yeah.
Well, and obviously seeing how the future is unfolding, it's brilliant because it, for other additional reasons too.
I know. We never suspected with the second cover, especially, we have Barack Obama throwing down a ladder from a helicopter with Joe Biden climbing up the ladder. And I'm like, that is exactly what is happening almost in this, you know, this presidential race is Joe's like, please come back, pull me up out of here. And it may end up be what's happening, you know, when Obama finally throws in his own two cents on the race or whatever. But it was interesting. They gave me that cover though, and they're like, do you think you can put a helicopter in your book? I was like, why? They're like, well, look at this. And I'm like, okay, we can do that. if you don't do it, don't worry, because, you know, in the first book we had a car on the cover that never appears in the book. And I've got maybe four, you know, comments, like emails and stuff about it that said, hey, you know, it's the red car there. And I'm like, yeah. And I think Joe Biden mentions that in the second book. Then he's like, what is this? Bunch of malarkey. Someone wrote a book about me and they put me in a car on the cover. I've never been in that car in my life. It's crazy.
Covered it off. Check the box.
Yeah. I'm like, don't worry. I'm like, we were thinking long term with that cover, you see?
Now, I'm sure you've gotten this question 100 times. Is there a third book coming?
Because
I feel like your window is closing rapidly. Maybe.
Well, I think what's happening is hopefully the window is opening further. I think I think it did close. What happened was we were ready to go with the third book, and it was supposed to be out July of this year. And I was already at work on it. It was going to be the Back to the Future kind of thing, where the third book is set in the Wild West. And so just because I said a picture of them on horseback on the cover together, you know, and with cowboy hats on. And at the end of it, you know, Joe was going to get on his horse and kind of ride. They were going to kind of ride off into the sunset together. And I was like, that's going to be very poetic. And Joe's out of public life for good. And, you know, Barack's going to be around. But and then what happens is Joe decides to throw himself into this race, and I go, no. And it was like the moment he announced, you know, I just went to my publisher and I'm like, I don't think this is going to work, because, you know, I had a whole, like I said, I do the emotional arc of the characters first. And I was like, the whole thing is about him, you know, taking one last ride and then going off into the sunset. And he's not. He like turned around. He turned his horse around and he's coming right at, you know. And so we had to put it on hold because there was just no way. And the great thing is he's provided so much in terms of new material for a third book. So yeah. I think very quickly I felt the window close, and now I feel that we can stretch it out. It'd probably be relevant for a couple of years now. So I have some time to really work on that. And we just have to wait to see what's happening. And in fact, we've been trying to do an animated series. And we've got some really great people on board for this. But again, I think it's just, we don't know what's going to happen. So you need to we need to hold off. I mean, I think, you know, what happens is if he becomes president, it's a very different emotional story for that third book, right, though, than if he does go off into the sunset. And a lot of times people are like, well, are you rooting for him? And I'm like, you know what? I already had the book written, you know, I mean, they had in my mind. So I'm like,
right,
I'm like, for a while I was thinking, I was like, you know, it'd be better for me personally if he kind of just walked away. But I said, you know, there's two things, one which works for the book and then one which works for, right, the country.
Right. True.
Right.
I feel the same way. I don't know. I played like fantasy baseball for a little while, you know, and when you would draft someone on a team that you hate and they'd play your team, and I just couldn't do it any longer because I was like, oh no, I'm rooting against my own team because it's in my own finance, you know, my interests here. So that's how I felt with Joe. I was like, I'm just going to let it play out and then we'll go from there.
You can always just add one page at the end that just says, oh, and they said, screw this, and turn their horses around.
Yes.
Just, book done.
Screw this.
And you said you are kind of a little bit of, in writing, somewhere between plotting it all out meticulously before you start and then sort of figuring it out as you go along. Has that always been the case with your Crump book, your 50 Shades of Grey, your Catsby? I mean, I guess Catsby is kind of, you know what happens. Everyone.
Yeah. I think the nice thing with the parody is you already know what's going to happen beat by beat. You just kind of mock the current structure. So that was like 50 Shades of Earl Grey was a parody. Catsby was a parody. These kind of parodies are, there's much faster, right? Because you don't have anything jump out at you that you didn't expect. Now, yeah, with other books though, I've tried it every which way. I've tried just sitting down and writing. I think if you just sit down and write with no idea at all, it kind of goes about 50 pages and you're feeling good. And then it just kind of stalls out for me. And so I've always tried to have, like I said, just an emotional structure to it. But yeah, I like to be surprised by the books because, you know, I wrote a Donald Trump satire about this crazy reality television host becoming president of the United States. And
got a lot less funny.
Wow, really?
It was, that was one where, you know, the book came out and it came out right as he was the presumptive nominee for the Republican Party. And all of a sudden nobody wanted to read it. You know, Republicans didn't want to read it because, you know, they thought you're making fun of this guy, and Democrats didn't want to read it because they were like, oh my God, it could really happen. And I was having to tell my therapist at the time, I said, don't worry, it's not going to happen. She would say every other week we'd meet and she'd be like, is it going to happen? Just tell me, what do you know? And I'm like, why are you're supposed to be telling me my paranoid delusions and fantasies are not real and stuff, and to calm down. And she was really freaking out. And I was just like, it's not going to happen. Don't worry. I don't have insider information. I just wrote a book about a guy that happens to become president and his name happens to be Donald Trump. And then he became president and I broke up with her through a postcard. I just sent a postcard in the mail that just said, I'm sorry. And then I never called my therapist again. I know. So, yeah, but no, but circling back to the question, I really like to find out, you know, I like to be surprised by what happens, and I've tried it both ways, and that way kind of works the best for me, I think, as long as I have some idea of where it's going. If I don't, the problem is you can write forever. You know, you could write why do you think David Foster Wallace's Infinite Jest was, you know, 7,000 pages or whatever? I don't think he had any idea what he was, you know, where he's going. And, and so you need some sort of plot, but not too much, not too much. Right.
So let's talk about the new book. Secret Santa comes out in November. This is something different, like a horror comedy, is that right? Mm-hmm, how would you describe this?
I I went to my publisher and I said, you know, after we were going to do that third Obama Biden book, and they said, you know, it's not, we both decided it's not going to work. I said, what have you wanted to do besides that? You know, what other political, do you want to do a George Bush, Michelle Obama book? You know,
adorable.
I had an idea to do, I had a pretty detailed proposal for a book called Hillary Clinton Pet Detective. And she had a little labradoodle, yes, named Bill.
Of course she did.
And together they would solve, it was going to be a cozy mystery series, so not a noir like the Biden, yes, Obama. It was totally different. Yes. And what happened was the week, well, in the book, it starts off the week after she loses 2016, she goes to the woods and she's done with humanity, and the animals come in around her and they say, don't give up on us. Don't give up. Go back, Mrs. Clinton. She talks to animals and she goes back and her faith in humanity is restored through animals. And she solves dog nappings, yes, and stuff. And it involved Barack Obama's dog, Bo, getting dog napped, which is pretty heavy, but I worked up a really detailed plot for this and everything, and wrote some sample chapters. And Quirk was like, what in the hell is this? You know, they're like, I'm like, I know it's a little different. And they said, don't people kind of, they're not really on board with Hillary. And I go, oh, I go, they're going to come back around. And they're like, maybe not. I don't know. So they said, what else do you want to do? And I go, I don't know. I've always wanted to write a horror novel or something to do with Christmas or
horrifying.
You know, they're like,
is.
Oh, well, okay. A Christmas horror novel. And they said, okay, yeah, let's do it. And so, it just really, I was like, I want to do like the complete opposite. And it probably irks my agent and, publicists and stuff, because every book that I do is almost completely different. Except for I did these two Obama Biden books, you know, in a row, but a lot of the books I do are just so different from each other, hopping genres. And I'm like, you know what? Quentin Tarantino can do it. And they're like, well, that's Quentin Tarantino. And I'm like, but I think directors do it a lot. You know, they're different kinds of movies and whatnot, and screenwriters do it so often. So it is weird that when you're a novelist or something, they're like, oh, well, we're going to have to use a pen name for this. And I'm like, no, I don't want to. And they're like, well, what if someone who read your other stuff picks it up? And I'm like, well, then it's still me in there. You know, I think it's still the tone. And I think, yeah, they said, what are you doing? I go, the tone is going to be humorous, but you know, it's not like a joke. It's not it's not another Sharknado, let's say,
right,
which is another book that I worked on. So it's not something like that. It is going to be a fairly serious, book, but there's humorous moments in it. And, it's hopefully it will be a lot of fun, I think. And if you've picked up my past books, you'll recognize the tone. I don't think there's any way I can not write like myself. I've tried it. I mean, I tried once to write a very serious, romance novel. I had an idea and I started to write it, and oh my gosh, my wife picked it up and was like, this is horrible. Do you have an earnest bone in your body? Can you not write? You know, she's like, all you have to do, it's very simple, just be earnest, you know. And I'm like, but I want to have fun.
Yes. Earnest is overrated.
And so I think in the Obama Biden books, though, I sort of synthesized sort of an earnestness with humor. And I think that's, you know, again, that's trying to maintain that sort of same tone with this new horror book that I'm working on.
Nice. Fantastic.
Yeah. Well, having read the Obama books, I am I'm actually looking forward to reading Secret Santa, and I'm not just saying that because you're sitting in front of me.
Oh,
we
excellent.
Don't say that. Like, I actually guest.
No, and I mean some of your older works. I'm looking to go back into those. Your what's the Secret Lives of Writers? The Literary Rogues.
Oh, Literary Rogues. Yeah, yeah. I wrote a couple of nonfiction books. Those are the first two books that I wrote were nonfiction books. Great Philosophers Who Failed at Love, about the love lives of philosophers, and Literary Rogues, A Scandalous History of Wayward Authors, which was just stories about authors drinking, doing drugs, having, you know, wild orgies. Perfect. Or whatnot.
Volume
you know,
one.
Right.
Volume one.
It's totally my genre right here.
and it was a lot of fun. It was just really just me researching a lot of authors that I'd really wanted to, you know, to write about, that I like to read. And I was like, what are their lives like? You know, when I was a kid, I always wanted to be an author, but I assumed that it was going to be you know, nonstop Hunter S. Thompson kind of, you know, well, I mean, at the time you had Stephen King, who was so coked out that he doesn't even remember writing Cujo. He's like, I don't have any memory of that book. And I'm like, wow, I'm not doing coke and I still don't remember writing some of my books. But anyway, I had this idea as a kid. I was like, that you're going to be a rock star as a writer. And then I found out that, you know, the outer world, you know, outside of the literary community, people don't view writers as rock stars. And the ones that, you know, that sort of lived like that were either very privileged, like Lord Byron, or were just kind of not nice people, like Hunter Thompson or Bukowski. And so that's what I found out about a lot of these characters. And a lot of them were men. And the book was originally called Literary Bad Boys, and it was supposed to be a critique of like asshole men. And unfortunately, what happened was the publisher persuaded me to put women in there because they go, why would women want to read this? Totally. And I said, well, it's making fun of these guys mostly. It's like saying, oh my God, they were real. These guys were real assholes, kind of, you know, to a lot of people. And so, but you know, that was a couple of years ago, but they were just like, why would you want to read about bad men? And I'm like, have you watched television?
Right. Why not? Why wouldn't you?
For some reason, people love that subject. I threw in some bad women, but oh my gosh, to be a bad, to women just did not have that opportunity to be such, you know, like you couldn't act like Hunter S. Thompson if you're a woman, you know, if you're Joan Didion or something. That would just be, oh my gosh, you would be thrown out of the literary establishment. But some reason Hunter S. Thompson gets to be his ashes shot into space and exploded or something on a rocket.
I mean, true.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. So, I know. So it was, it was a fun book to write. I was like, I'll be able to write off every bar tab for the next year. It's going to be awesome. That did not happen. The more I read, the less I did. I quit drinking for a while. Because it got to be so depressing. I was like, wow. You know how many more, you know, stories Edgar Allan Poe might have written if he hadn't been drinking. And I mean, he has about four or five stories that are well known, and then the rest are kind of terrible. I just think he would have been, there's no telling what he could have done, you know? That was a fun book though.
That's
I don't know if it counts as a rogue. Is Mary Shelley in there?
Yes. Yeah.
Cause I've read her described as the first goth.
Shelley and, her husband and the supposed, well, I don't think they had threesomes with Byron, but they
who wouldn't have a threesome with Byron? Everybody would have a threesome with Byron.
With Byron and his club foot.
I thought it was more of the sort of consummation of her relationship with Percy on her mother's grave that sort of made her very you know, Robert Smith or, true, you know, mm-hmm, pick your.
Oh, yeah. There have been so many great books written about Shelley and Percy. They have such a. Yeah, they were the first goths. And it's unfortunately, a lot of the stuff that I found out about these writers was that a lot of the most famous stories are apocryphal. You know, you hear about like Thomas Dillon drinking 34 drinks and falling over on his bar stool. And that's not what happened. You know, he was actually sick before he went to the bar. He had the flu, went to the bar, had a few drinks, because the doctor told him that he was fine to go out or something. He went back to his hotel room, fell into like a coma or something, and the doctor couldn't get him back up. You know, it's like, oh, well, I just heard he drank 34 drinks and fell over on his bar stool. There's even like a little plaque at the White Horse, the tavern, that says this is where, you know, he had his last drink and fell over. And I'm like, that didn't happen at all. So yeah. So fair warning, if you read the book, there's a lot of stuff where I sort of debunk what, you know, like Hemingway, who never said write drunk, edit sober, which is just really depressing. And even more depressing, Hemingway never touched alcohol while he was writing. He would get up like at 5 or 6 in the morning, write for 3 or 4 hours, and then he would drink the rest of the day. But no matter how hungover he was, no matter whatever, he got up like at 5 or 6 in the morning and wrote everything. He was very disciplined. And I'm like, that's not fun.
You know? At least he picked it up at like 10, though.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I feel like it's like learning that the stories from the dirt are untrue, which would devastate me.
Oh, no. Is it the Motley Crue thing?
That wonderful book.
Oh, no. I have not read that.
Oh, the book's amazing.
Take it, Heidi.
It's my favorite book. I'm not a fan of the band, but the book is amazing. It's the best tell-all ever. The movie does not do it justice.
For more information on Andrew or any of his books, go to andrewschafer.com, and you can get copies of those books anywhere you normally do. Amazon, Barnes & Noble. But right now, we would highly recommend you go check out an independent bookstore. Call them. Ask them if they can order you a copy if they don't have one in stock. If you're looking for signed copies, you can get it at the Fountain Bookstore. Their website is fountainbookstore.com.
Be sure to follow Why the Podcast on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, and check out our YouTube channel for some additional great Why content. If you're so inclined, please leave us a review and let us know how we're doing.
Today's show is produced by myself and Heidi Hedquist. Our reluctant executive producers are John Sove and Sandy Stone. Our graphic designer is Samantha Mustonen. Our intern is Randy Jeanette. The theme song was performed by the Electrosynthno-Magnetic Polyphonic Orchestra. This one's for Philippe. Thanks for joining us. Flash, we're coming home.
Nigel, is that you? Are you here? Nigel?